Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up with shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You are now talking with TD. Shout out to each of you for tuning in and listening. I got Elijah Campbell hitting the switches. Great show for you today. We got Mike DiRocco, my teammate at ESPN NFL Nation. He covers the Jaguars, and we're going to double down because we also have James Johnson from the Jaguars Wire of USA Today Sports Media Group. And we're going to get into a little bit of the running game. You know what happens when you tune into this station? You get Run TMC. That's right. But first things first, I want to take a look at what this defense was able to do. A 16-14 win over the Denver Broncos on the road in the season opener in that high altitude. One thing was for sure, Jadeveon Clowney, 47 snaps. That joker was tired. And I get it. You know, you saw the hands on the hip. You saw the heavy breathing. But, hey, he played 47 snaps. And that's, to me, is impressive after only being out there for a week. You got to see, as we had predicted, he worked in tandems. Maybe not as much on stunts, but for the most part, he was in tandem with Jeffrey Simmons. And Jeffrey Simmons, I actually asked him about that after the game. And that kid is very mature. And he has a very good understanding of things because he wouldn't accept the focus being on he and Clowney. He said, look, it's all 11. You know, and I tried to redirect, but it didn't happen. He knows that that duo is going to be outstanding. He knows that. But he wanted that focus to be on all 11. And while we're on Simmons, that dude, especially in the red zone, in the low red zone, goal line, man.
You could look back and say that that's what won the game in the end. It took a ton of pressure off that offense, a ton of pressure. And, hey, Jeffrey Simmons stopping a Melvin Gordon-led rushing attack at the one-yard line when the game's on the line. Stop me if you've heard that before.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. And I love what Mike Vrabel said about it. And I love what Kevin Byers said, too, because they were asked, you know, what is the key to what happens at the goal line with the stops? And you know what? There's really not a formula. And they said it. It just comes down to man on man, whooping the man in front of you's tail. And that's what Jeffrey Simmons seems to do. And you see the stuff that he works on, the whole D-line. They work on this stuff with Terrell Williams, right? You see them going through the different things that they do. You see them on the sled. I mean, you guys have seen and girls have seen my videos. That stuff is coming to fruition on game day. And that's just yet another example of the effectiveness of what they do in practice. So definitely got to shout the Titans coaches, out for that. But one thing that kind of negates that is a quick passing game. And that's what the Broncos went to. They were able to move the pocket a bit too, but the ball was coming out quickly. So I expect that to be something that the Jaguars will do. I mean, it's what they did in the opener. And it's going to be really important for these guys up front to understand that if you're not getting home, put your hands up. You want to impact that passing lane and clog it, like make the quarterback have to maybe change his angle or reset or something to try to make that quick throw. Ultimately, what you want to do is be able to knock it in the air and one of your linebackers or DBs catch it. But that's going to be key this week, and it's something that, you know, is going to have to happen. But when you look at the Broncos game, I mean, there was a point where Drew Lock was money on the move. Like, they would get him on the move, and he was complete. I think it was like 6 for 6 on you know, when throwing on the move, and they were able to get him outside of that contain. That's how the touchdown happened. Actually, they got him outside of that contain, and he attacked the line of scrimmage. Kamale Correa came up because when he attacked, he came off of his guy, and then Vaccaro picked him up. But the point in that is Jack Crawford didn't have the contain. It was his job on that case because Correa dropped back into coverage. And that's an example of, you know, being a little bit more disciplined with your pass rush. They're going to have to do that. Minshew is not really the same type of guy when it comes to athleticism as Drew Lock. I mean, Elijah, as I told you, Drew Lock was a top-tier hooper. I mean, the dude had D1 scholarship offers to play basketball. So you're not talking about, like, you know.
He's no statue is what you're saying.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And Minshew isn't either, but I still feel that Locke is a better athlete than him. But the point is, you got to keep that quarterback in the pocket, especially with the way, you know, they have this tiered pass rush setting up with Harold Landry, Clowney coming on the outside and the pocket being collapsed by Simmons. So they want to make sure that they do that and be aware of the quick passing game. But another thing that you have to look at, Jerry Jeudy. I mean, first things first, I was really surprised that Chris Jackson – went out there with the first nickel. I fully felt that it would be Christian Fulton, but I understand what Vrabel said afterwards as far as not being available. I mean, he wasn't there. He missed a full 7 days of practice. And at that time, I remember that's when Chris Jackson started to get that first team. But Jerry Jeudy, his releases, man, those releases were stinky. And he got open against Fulton, too, but he got open against Jackson and dropped it. But for the most part, I think those guys played solid football. It's going to get better as they get more experience. I really expect to see Fulton take that job at some point, but we'll see what happens. But I think the rookies, you know, they showed that they're capable of going out there. Of course, they were facing another rookie receiver this week. They'll probably face another rookie in Viska Chenault, who I did a wipe for Whiteboard Wednesdays. I drew something up on how they could scheme to get him open. And there were a couple plays where a couple of Minshew's biggest gains. You know, it was an 18-yarder. I think another one was a 15-yarder. Matter of fact, the 15-yarder was a touchdown. And they kind of put a scheme together with switch releases, and then also another one with just, you know, a route where a combination where the two routes cross, and it's trying to cause some type of miscommunication to get one of those guys open. So if we're talking about a miscommunication and we're talking about fighting a scheme, I think the best guy to ask is Kevin Byard. So when we got to talk to Byard on Wednesday, I asked him straight up, like, how do you avoid having those miscommunications when a team is scheming to create that? Here's what Byard said.
They just play with great eyes. That's something that I felt like we didn't do very well on Monday night in the Denver game, some things we got to clean up there. But just really just playing with good eyes, playing within the defense, understanding that as a defensive back, you know, having your eyes in the backfield, usually bad things will happen. So, you know, having your eyes on your man, if you have man coverage on the receiver, just having your eyes on him, or vice versa if it's a tight end or whatever. So just having your eyes on man, just playing within the defense.
And you already know that Byard watches film, but that even says it even more because he said whether it's a wide receiver or tight end, one of the things that the Jaguars did, if they weren't sending the tight end in motion or one of the other receivers in motion, most of the time they had like a tight end trips, a bunch type of look where it was all together. And when you have those, what we call, especially when they're close, these were just close splits, but you'll see it even more like the Chiefs do it a lot, where they have zero splits. So the guys are almost on top of each other. These were close splits. But the point is, when they are lined up like that, that automatically creates separation. And when you have the quick passing game, you want, as a receiver, you want to be able to get off the and get into your route immediately. As a quarterback, you want that too. Because if there's any chatter at the line of scrimmage, whereas the corner coming up and jamming the dog mess out of the receiver, What's going to end up happening is that quarterback is looking to his next read. No time for you to be sitting there at the line of scrimmage having a conversation. It's, excuse me, I got a route to run. And that's the way it's supposed to be. And if it's not the way, the quarterback's not going to look to you. So a lot of us have mentioned, especially after the Broncos game, how important it is to get to the line of scrimmage and be disruptive and tear up the timing. And that is very important. But there are things that teams could do to avoid that. And one of the things that the Jaguars did was send Viska Chenault in motion. It's a lot harder to get a jam on a guy if he's A, in motion, and off the ball when he releases. Like, it's harder. So then you combine that with a switch release and guys could get open. I know I jumped into a foxhole, but I just love talking about that stuff. But like I said, man, we got a great show today. Before we move on, I want to just tempt you and urge you to look us up on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. You can find us at Talking With TD. Once you find us, subscribe, rate, review. I appreciate you. We'll be right back.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD.
All right, back from the break. We're going to keep the Jaguars talk going. I got my man James Johnson from the Jaguars Wire of USA Today Sports Media Group. Jay, what's going on, man?
Not much, man. I can't complain. It's a little rainy in my neck of the woods, but otherwise, I'm good.
Hey, listen, man, after the rain comes the rainbow, so you make the most of it. I'm sure that's what you're doing. That's what the Jaguars did, right? I mean, hey, this is a team that everyone picked to be the worst in football, but they started the season 1-0. I want to talk about the defense because when you look at what they went out there and did, I mean, you had a turnover. They played ball. That's really the bottom line. So I want to start up front. And when you look at Josh Allen, Kalyvon Chaisson, and those young players, what impressed you about their front and the pressure that they were able to get?
Yeah, well, going into the game, for me, I knew an X factor would have to be Devon Hamilton, who is their third-round rookie, who I'm sure you're well aware of, came out of Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And he was a guy, you know, granted with the situation they were in where they lost all of these guys in the interior, Marcell Dareus, who they didn't re-sign via his contract. They also lost Calais Campbell, who sees significant time in the interior as well. And they tried to replace those guys essentially in free agency, but they had bad luck there. They got Rodney Gunter in free agency to fill that Campbell role, but Rodney Gunter, come to find out, it was last month that he had a heart condition and had to retire. And, you know, prayers to him as well. And they tried to get Al Woods in free agency as well, but Al Woods, after signing, decided to opt out to the coronavirus. So, yeah, like you said, you know, for Josh Allen and Chaisson to succeed, I knew that they needed that interior force in the middle. And they got some help there in some points of the game. You know, I would say they were more of a bend but don't break type of defense against the Titans. But they got contributions from Avery Jones, who stopped the key third down or fourth down run on conversions for them. They also got some key contributions, like I said, from Devon Hamilton as well, which that kind of helped Kalyvon Chaisson and Josh Allen on the outside. But at the same time, I look at the film and say that, you know, the Jaguars are probably going to need more to beat the Titans. But in their favor, the Titans probably don't have as much of a good offensive line as the Colts do, because as we all know, the Colts are kind of elite in that category. So hopefully we'll see more out of Chaisson, and hopefully we'll see more out of Josh Allen in this upcoming game.
Yeah, I mean, Josh Allen, he's just – I mean, in one word, special. And I really enjoy watching him play. But then let's take it to the second level. And with Joe Schobert, he's a new guy in town. He gives them that Paul Posluszny type of linebacker that just has really good anticipation, always finds the football strong against the run. How has he been for that team, and how has he – ingratiated himself into that lineup as a standout player?
Yeah, he's going to be a tremendous help, because going into the season, the Jacksonville Jaguars knew what they had to do, and that was get Miles Jack away from the Mike linebacker position and get him to the weak side linebacker position where he's better suited for it. He's better in space and more of an instinctive guy. He struggled at Mike linebacker. So what they did, they went and got Joe Schobert. Many people anticipated that they would get a Mike linebacker. That's exactly what they did. And Joe Schobert not only allows Miles Jack to play a position that he's very, very good at, and we saw that week one, but he also, like you say, he brings that Paul Posluszny type of mentality to the locker room where, you know, he can help him from a leadership standpoint, help get everybody lined up and so on and so forth. Now, in week one's game, you know, there were a few times where he was out of position and so on and so forth. But in due time, I do think he'll settle in more. And his impact was definitely felt in a sense of getting Miles Jack to a better position where Miles Jack had 11 total tackles. He looked like the best player on the field almost, if you will, aside from C.J. Henderson and maybe Gardner Minshew. But, yeah, he brings that quarterback type of a role to that defense that the Jacksonville Jaguars needed because, you know, it just wasn't pretty much made for Miles Jack last year as we saw.
And we're talking to Jay Johnson from USA Today, SMG's The Jaguars Wire. Jay, tell me a little bit about one of the other linebackers in Leon Jacobs, because I know I laugh because I think back to Derrick Henry's 99-yard run, and that's something that I know he took a little bit personally. How is he as far as a guy to help out in that run defense?
Yeah, well, Leon Jacobs faced a tall task this year in terms of training camp. And as we all know, training camp wasn't the usual process that we've seen in the past in the preseason. But they actually brought in competition there in terms of bringing in Cassius Marsh, who, you know, who had a good training camp, actually, by most people's account. But still, nonetheless, Leon Jacobs prevailed in that situation. And also people, you know, don't realize that they also initially wanted to try Kalavon Chase on that strong side linebacker as well. But like a few weeks before the season, Todd Walsh comes out and say, hey, we'd rather have Kalavon at big end and at defensive end in general. So I think that's a testament of their faith in Leon Jacobs being able to make them comfortable enough to say, hey, let's just let Kalavon stick to defensive end. And also that was a testament of them bringing in Cassius Marsh to push him and him still prevailing in training camp. So he's a guy that we're going to watch closely this year. The staff really, really likes him, obviously. And, I mean, he's your prototypical strong side linebacker. I mean, I like what I saw of him when he came out of Wisconsin. And I'm hoping, you know, the play improves on his part in 2020.
C.J. Henderson, the big turnover he created, interception. It was a pass. Phillip Rivers intended for T.Y. Hilton. What is it about C.J. Henderson? They took him top 10. So what was it about him you think that they liked? And did he showcase that talent this past Sunday?
Yeah, well, I mean, the Jacksonville Jaguars have this history of not only drafting SEC players and Florida players from the city or the state of Florida and players from the University of Florida. But, you know, that fit the whole trend of, you know, what they like to scout and what they like to bring in. They love that competition level that the SEC brings on. And obviously that was on display last week with the Tennessee Titans, with the Indianapolis Colts and Phillip Rivers. They want these players that are battle tested. So, you know, in this scenario where there wasn't a preseason, you know, it's a little bit less of a pickup for those players. And obviously C.J. Henderson, you know, picked it up pretty quickly. Now he's going to take his lumps. And I was just watching the film today. You know, it was moments where Phillip Rivers threw at him and he got a few on him. But for the most part, C.J. Henderson had a phenomenal game for a rookie at the cornerback position, which isn't exactly easy to master, especially without a preseason so early into your career or what have you. So I think, you know, it was just that whole element of the competition level that they like that they brought him in. And he's proven them right in a lot of aspects of them taking him. And not only that, but it was parts of his game that people were concerned about as he was in Florida, and as he was drafted, that he showed up in as well. The tackling was one that people mm-hmm. had concerns for. He came yep. up and made several key tackles that prevented, you know, severe yardage on the Indianapolis Colts' part. So I think people, you know, like really are getting on board with him because it seems like somehow that aspect of his game has gotten better. And, you know, he's a guy that we're going to be watching heading forward. But, I mean, when you look at his performance in terms of rookies in general around the league, his was definitely probably one of the top one or two standout performances that you would see on the first week of the NFL.
It's always nice to see a guy identify an area for improvement and turn it into a strength. And judging from what you said, that's what he's done. So shout out to C.J. Henderson on that perspective. But he was known as a cover guy. So I have to ask you, do you expect to see him travel with A.J. Brown, or you think he's just going to take whoever lines up? Like, what type of confidence do you think that defensive staff has in C.J. Henderson if they want him to travel with the number one?
If they had to make a decision on that and, you know, like make it like a Jalen Ramsey type of situation, I know a lot of people don't like me to bring up that name in Jacksonville.
He's a good player.
But yeah, he is. He's a good player. And, you know, at times he was allowed to travel. But I think, you know, based off, you only have one game to base it off of. But, you know, I would. If it was me, I was defensive coordinator. If I was Todd Wash, I would let him travel against A.J. Brown, who is somebody, if I can recollect, he's seen A.J. Brown in college. That's a key part of this, too. He's lined up against him, if I can recollect from the film that I've seen. So that being said, I would let him travel. I think the Jaguars might do so as well, because one thing like that's concerning me when I looked at the film earlier today was the play of Trey Herndon, and that's the other starting cornerback that mm-hmm. they have. And, you know, Trey Herndon didn't have the best game, in my opinion. So maybe that could factor into it, but ultimately time will tell.
Do you think, because I know DJ Hayden is there, but do you think there's any possibility that Sidney Jones could get a call up from the practice squad and be someone, being as though Herndon, he's a Vandy guy, I believe. I think he's
right, correct.
Yeah. So do you think that his struggles will open up a door for Sidney Jones at any time in the near future?
I do. I actually, and it was yesterday that they promoted him from, and I'm talking about Sidney Jones here, from practice squad.
Right.
And again, when I look at the film, I believe that is, you know, they haven't said it or they haven't alluded to it or indicated that, but I think that was the key reason Trey Herndon struggling, why they went that direction. And also, I mean, they did lose a defensive back for 3 weeks on IR, and that was starting safety Gerard Wilson. So the spot became available. But Wilson plays safety, and, you know, here they are bringing in another cornerback. Need I remind you, this team has, like, five, I think, or six cornerbacks already on it, and they're bringing another one in. So that being said, like, to me, that was alarming. And I've always said it, though, from the jump. When Sidney Jones joined the Jazz practice squad, I did not expect him to stay on there long. I don't think anybody did. And I do think, you know, I've been saying this from the beginning as well, that he will be inserted into the lineup, in the defensive lineup, sooner rather than later.
Yeah, that would be really interesting to see, because I remember that draft. Actually, Adoree Jackson was in that class also. Marshawn Lattimore as well. Trey Davis White. Wow, it was stacked. But I had Sidney Jones pretty high on my list. Obviously, that Achilles injury kind of turned things around, and he struggled to stay healthy in Philly. But if they could find something with him, I mean, that's a nice tandem. A nice trio, actually, Herndon, Jones, and the youngster in Henderson. So, well, Jay, man, I appreciate you coming on. Go ahead and let them know where they could find your work, follow you on Twitter, everything, because you brought a lot of information, and I think you need to be have a light shined on you, because you got it together.
I appreciate it. Much appreciated. Thanks for having me. And for those who want to follow me, you can follow me at sportsgrind_Don on Twitter. The Jaguars Wire, you can follow us in the latest in Jaguars news. And, you know, we'll be covering the Titans situation leading up into the game. That is jaguarswire.usatoday.com. As well as we have a podcast that me and my buddy Phil Smith run. Shout out to Phil Smith. It's called the Believe in Jags podcast with the Believe Podcast Network. And you can also find that in my bio. It's Believe in Jags Pod. So pretty much that's where you can find anything Jags related if you need to check on the Jaguars this week as they are preparing for the Tennessee Titans.
There you have it, Jay. Appreciate you again, and we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on again, and you have a good one, man.
Run, DMT.
Fresh.
For you. Fresh. Fresh.
Yes, yes, yes. It's that time of the week. Run TMC, yours truly, TD. But more importantly, we got my guy, Chris Sanders. Chris, what's going on?
What's up, big dog, man? I'm doing pretty good. First of all, before we start the show, man, I got a big question to ask you, and I want it 100% truth. Who's your favorite old wide receiver? Is it 81 or is it Nate Washington?
Ooh, you're putting me to the test. Well, you see here, I like when we talk about the running game, but I like when Nate is on Nate and TD, so I'm going to go with both of them.
No. Nate's my Nate. I'm telling you, Nate's a good receiver. Nate's a great guy, great analyst, but you got to make a choice today. Who's your favorite wide receiver?
All right, look, man, I'm going to be honest. I'm going to go with 81 just because now here's the truth, and I told you this the first time I talked to you. I had the 8x10 because every year I would buy Street and Smith's Athlon. I would buy that, and they would always have the receivers
there we go.
In the picture. I cut that out, and I had it up there with 84 Joey Galloway
no
and
gal.
19 Keyshawn Johnson
wow.
and Marvin Harrison, 88. I had a bunch of them. So, you know, we got a little bit of a history.
Yeah, it's all good. I know, hey, Nate's a great player. When he was with the Tennessee Titans, man, it was an honor to watch him play, man. But just a great dude, man. Great teammate. I watch how he encourages guys. So, man, even if you'd have picked Nate, man, I'd have been 100% perfect. He's a great dude, man.
Hey, I was just, you know, you went to college with me. You didn't know it, but you went to college with me. So you were with me for a year. So,
oh, wow.
Hey, look, man, you're on my wall. So, listen, it is what it is.
I appreciate you, boss.
So this running game.
Yeah, uh-oh.
I need to get your take. If you ask me what I thought of it, it's one word answer, methodical.
Yeah.
What's your take on what they did?
It really, really was, man. But if you look at what he ran for, he was 31 for 116, but it didn't feel like it. I mean, it really didn't. I looked up, and by halftime, he had 55 yards. I'm like, where did they come from? But here's the thing. You know, even though we didn't see the big runs, I think sometimes we get spoiled by that.
Yes.
But here's the maturation of Henry. You know, two or three years ago, when he was running the ball, he was running side to side and losing yards and not falling forward, and next you know it's second and 12. Look at what he did. When he was getting hit, he was falling forward. Now, as opposed to being second and 12, now it's second and 5, and you're putting the whole offense in a great position. Why? Because you fell forward and got those 5 yards.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I'll say this, man. Those Jaguars, that's Uh-oh. Next week. Those Broncos linebackers, man. I had mentioned Josie Jewell, man. That was a hard hit that he got.
Yeah.
But those guys were really attacking, and the fact that they just kept hammering away. And I asked Derek after the game what it was that allowed the running game to just finally hit. And he said, man, we just kept pounding. And that's literally what they did. They kept pounding away.
Yeah, they did. But also, too, we got to remember that Henry is a space runner. When I say a space runner, he's a one cut and he's gone. That's why they're so good at running the outside zone. If you look at what the Denver Broncos were doing, they were taking away the B and C gap. So when the B and C gap was closed, he couldn't make that one cut and go. So sometimes he had to bounce it. Sometimes he just had to, you know, just stick it up in there and get about 4 or 5 yards. But you got to give credit to, just like you said, you got to give credit to the Denver Broncos defense. Their defense was bringing a hat, and they were physical with the first two quarters.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I'm glad you mentioned the first two quarters because Derrick Henry had 116 on the day.
That's crazy.
That final drive, he had 33.
See, that's what I'm saying.
See?
And I think sometimes, TD, we're so spoiled of seeing, you know, Derrick Henry with the big run like he get against the Kansas City Chiefs and the Texans and some different teams. Sometimes this is what Mike Vrabel wants. We want to pound you. And then when it gets to the fourth quarter, then all of a sudden you have those big runs like Derrick Henry's been having.
Yeah, and his biggest run of the day actually came on that drive.
Yeah.
It was a 13-yard run, and by Derrick Henry standards, right, that's yeah. pedestrian, yeah. but still,
right.
to be able to – I mean, they got the ball at the 10-yard line with, yeah. with, what, 3 minutes left?
Unbelievable.
And they marched down that football and football field, and by the time Stephen Gostkowski went out there,
yeah,
and I laughed because, props to Coach Rabel for,
right, no
you
doubt.
Know, I don't know if I would have, I mean, he pretty much had no choice at that point. But
yeah.
the point is, by the time he went out there to kick the field goal, you know, there was just over 17 seconds left.
Wow.
The only way you drive down the field like that and eat up that clock is how?
Yeah.
The running.
His running. Oh, and the thing about it is, too, is, you know, you look at Tannehill, you look at Henry, you look at that offense, it's like they were made for this moment. I mean, if you look at two and three years ago, in our mind, we had doubts that, man, the Tennessee Titans are not going to win. But now, yeah. when you have 3 minutes left, I just knew they were going to win. Why? Because you got the quarterback. You're going to pound with Henry. Henry's going to be physical. And just imagine. And another thing, it's fourth quarter. It's 3 minutes left. You gassed. You tired. You need Gatorade. You need oxygen. And here comes two, look, staring you down in your face. What you going to do? You going to hit him or you going to let him go? I'm going to let him go because he's too big, Doc.
And you talk about expecting to win.
Yeah.
Since week 7, when Tannehill took over, no team has more fourth quarter comebacks. Actually wrote about that on ESPN.com, Titans page.
Yeah.
Check it out if you want to. That is what we call a plug. But 5 fourth quarter comebacks, yeah. more than any other team, more than the Chiefs, more than the Saints, mm-hmm. more than the Cowboys, the Texans, you name it. Tannehill has more fourth quarter comebacks. Now, obviously, a lot of that is because of the rushing attack, but here's what you have to look at. And that fourth quarter drive is the best example yeah. of it. 33 yards passing, or 33 yards rushing, 34 yards passing. That, folks, is what we call balance.
I mean, it really is balance, but it just shows you, and you take your hat off to Mike Vrabel and that coaching staff, especially the offense, is in practice, they prepare for this. This is not where we're just going to go out and try to win the game. They practice this in a football game. Okay, it's you know, you're minus 10, you got 3 minutes, 2 timeouts, and you got to make a touchdown or you got to make a field goal. So it's not that you know they're just going out there and saying we're hoping we'll win. They mm-hmm. prepared weeks and weeks and weeks for those moments like this. So you know you take your hat off for Mike Vrabel, you take your hat off for Arthur Smith and that offensive coaching staff. They did a great job preparing these guys for moments like this.
No doubt, and that's a great point that you make, the situational awareness and preparation.
Yeah.
And it makes me think of a time during camp mm-hmm. when Vrabel said, okay, we're going to put the ball down on the right hash.
Right.
31 seconds left. Down by 2. We need a field goal. Let's go. And it was at like they needed to get like another 20-something
right.
yards to get the field goal.
And it's just funny, too, is you notice that when it's 3 minutes left in the game, it's like their mindset changes. It's kind of like me fighting a little brother. Yeah, you let him kind of wrestle you for a little bit, but then you get a mindset like, dude, I'm supposed to be beating you. And that's exactly what the Tennessee Titans have been doing in these last 7 games of what you're talking about. Like, okay, it's 3 minutes left. I know we're behind. We got to make a touchdown. But I'm supposed to be beating you. And they go down there, and they win the ball game. So, you know, it's just really cool to see the mentality, the difference of mentality that the Tennessee Titans have as opposed to the past years. The past years, we were unsure if they were going to make the play. We were unsure about the quarterback situation. We were unsure about these guys making plays. It's just a mindset. When them cats step in the huddle, it's like, uh-uh, we're going to go win this game. And they did that in the last 7 games that we saw last year and opposed to the one when this year if we get the Broncos.
Speaking of little brother, the Jaguars are playing.
Uh-oh.
Their defense is kind of like a little brother to yeah. Derrick Henry. I mean, he has over 400 yards in over the last 3 times that he faced them. Now, I'll say this. Early, their first meeting last year, mm-hmm. they were able to slow him down.
Right.
Yeah, Calais Campbell there, you know.
Yeah.
So he's out of the picture. How do you think this Titans rushing attack, how do you think Derrick Henry is going to do against Jacksonville?
You know what? It's going to be kind of the same thing with when they played the Denver Broncos. It may be a little slow, but you got to stay with the process. And I know everybody's talking about Calais Campbell not being there, but I'm going to tell you something. This defense, they run a 4-3 defense. They still got some dogs on this team. Don't get it twisted. Mm-hmm. They got Josh Allen. They got Miles Jack. They got C.J. Henderson, a cornerback. They got Trey Herndon. They got Andrew Wingard. They got guys that can still be physical. So you don't think that they're riding with a lot of confidence. And then even last week, they just beat Indianapolis Colts. And I went back and saw that film to see, okay, was this a fluke or you know, did something crazy happen? No, sir. This team is playing with a different attitude. I know it's the first game, and I'm not, you know, crowning them already, but I'm going to tell you something. When you start getting rid of bad apples, when you start getting rid of people that are not a part of your vision, all of a sudden you have people that are a part of that vision, attitudes change, mindsets change. This is going to be a good game now. This ain't going to be a blowout, but it's going to be a really good game.
Yeah, and it's a divisional game. And, you know, those games are always close.
Yeah. I mean, just like when we used to play when I played with the Tennessee Titans, it was about 75 years ago. When we played the Jacksonville Jaguars, we'd always say this, get your big boy pads ready. Yeah. Because it's going to be a physical, hit you in the mouth, punch you in the face game. So it's going to be like that now. So Henry's going to have to go out there, even if he starts off slow and, you know, say it's in the first half, he only has 10 yards, stay with the process, and later on down the road, you hit them in the mouth and get those chunk yards that you can get.
Bad apples being gone. A quote-unquote bad apple, supposedly, you know, for that franchise was Leonard Fournette. He's out of there. Well, what do you make of this rushing attack? I know the Titans, like, they had interest in Rykael Armstead. I remember Tony Dews was at Temple watching him. He's not really in the mix, but it's now Chris Thompson, James Robinson. What are your thoughts on that attack they have?
You know what? I like James Robinson. You know, he's an undrafted player. So you don't think he's going to be fired up to play the Tennessee Titans? I mean, if you look at last week, I watched the game. Hey, this dude's no slouch now, man. I'm telling you, he may not be like a Fournette, but he's making some plays. He's catching the screen balls. He's catching passes. But also, he's making those tough runs. So, you know, even though we fall in love with names, don't fall in love with the names. You may not know this guy, but don't slip up and let this guy beat you, because James Robinson can play this ball, can play ball, I'm telling you.
Oh, hey, listen, man. You ain't saying but a thing. Because let me tell you this.
Chicken wing.
I picked him up on waivers before the game.
Oh, okay.
I put the pitch in on Friday, and it happened. Or no, I put it in on Thursday, and it happened on Friday. So that was definitely something that you're preaching to the choir on that one, man. But like always, we're sharing the brain. And before we get you out of here, you said next week. That's what you said last week, and I had you out of here on the tippy comment. So go ahead and let them know, because I'm sure that. Yeah, let them know.
When I was born, man, I couldn't walk flat-footed. And ever since that day, I started walking on my toes, and from that day, they called me tippy toes. I mean, you can't be really cool when you're walking on your tippy toes, but I guess what? There's some things you can do with it. You can have the longest jump in the history of Colorado in high school. You can break Jesse Owens' long jump record. Man. That's what happens when they call you tippy toes, because you tip right by him, baby.
So they might have called you tippy, but you were picking them up and
putting them down.
As always, man.
That's what's up, man.
Appreciate you coming
on. You, bro, always.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Care, man.
Next week.
Yes, sir.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byard, and I'm talking with TD.
You got to get ready for the big payback. All right, back from the break, talking with TD. Got that music on specifically for the team that our next guest covers. The Jaguars ran into some trouble against the Titans the last time they were here at Nissan Stadium. But the last time the Jaguars were here, I got to talk to my guy in person, Mike DiRocco, who covers the Jaguars. I don't know why I'm almost saying the Titans, man. You coming for my job or something?
Yeah. I'm good. I only got one team to worry about. I don't need another one.
No doubt about it, man. So how's everything going?
It's good. We are not impacted by the hurricane over here in Northeast Florida. We've got some wind, but man, the people in the Panhandle are getting, in Alabama and the Gulf are getting hammered. But we're doing okay over here, so I guess it's a good game, Zach Bowman. The Jags are undefeated. Can't say that very often.
Yeah, 27-20 over the Colts. Now, the Colts are a team that a lot of people, including myself, picked to be a contender for the AFC South Division. That offense put up 27 points on them without Leonard Fournette. What's going on down there?
Well, I'll tell you, the biggest thing was this team was efficient in the red zone. They were one of the league's worst teams in the red zone last year, and they got in twice and score touchdowns, and then they got another touchdown from 22 yards out. So the offense wasn't efficient. It wasn't eye-opening. It wasn't, you know, dominating or whatever. They got some opportunities with some short fields with some turnovers, and they were efficient and effective in the red zone. And Minshew, you know, whatever his limitations are, and he has a few, he is a pretty darn accurate passer. And that's kind of how you go 19 of 20. And the only one that wasn't a completion was sort of a drop. So it was just a real efficient day, and they operated, you know, pretty smoothly for the first week and no preseason games.
Now, one of his completions, I believe the ball traveled over 20 yards, so we checked the air yards mark, but I will say a good – he was, what, 9 for 9 from 10 yards and closer, and he had a couple other completions behind the line of scrimmage, so he got those free yards. So, obviously, there's some scheme things going on. From your perspective, what was it that they tried to do? Was there a certain guy that they tried to isolate and get quick passes to? What did you see?
Well – you know, the funny thing is like he threw passes to 11 receivers. So he really spread the ball around out there. The thing of it is like I said before, he's pretty accurate. And this this West Coast-style offense that Jay Gruden is kind of running really fits him because it's, you know, get the ball out quick, you know, get it to your guys and give them a chance to make some yards after the catch. They use a lot of crossers, you know, and he did that. And the funny thing is, you know, for a guy that doesn't have a big arm, he really is a really good deep ball thrower, especially those throws down the sideline. They only did it once. So I'm expecting at some point them to unleash a little bit more of that. But he really, you know, the thing was spreading the ball around. I mean, DJ Chark only caught, what, 3 passes last week? Chris Conley, 1. Laviska Shenault had 3. Keelan Cole, 5. So they really kind of spread it out. And I think that's sort of what they want to do. You know, and that's going to be, you know, the game plan going forward. I don't think they want to isolate one guy, to be honest with you. If there's one guy they want to isolate, it would probably be Chark. But, man, if they feel like they've got these other weapons, they can spread it around a little bit. And the receiver group is the strength of their team. So that, I think that's what we're going to see from this group going forward.
Yeah, I mean, in watching that game, that's what I saw. You got to see them use a lot of bunch, and that just automatically creates – separation at the line, right? It forces the corners to take a step back, and the receivers get the free releases, and now that quick pass game is really effective. So is that something in getting to watch Jay Gruden and that offense go to work? I mean, was there anything that stood out? Was there anything impressive to you in watching them?
You know, the funny thing is you know, they drafted Laviska Shenault in the second round, and you know, their idea was, hey, we're going to use him in a lot of different ways. We're going to put him in the backfield. We're going to let him take a wildcat snap, which he did. So, to me, the fun thing is watching them try to figure out the best way to use this kid. Because, and I would admit, I didn't watch a lot of Pac-12 football, so I didn't see a lot of him. But, you know, after they drafted him and you look at highlights of him when he's healthy, he's just phenomenal.
It's yeah, he's fantastic. Legit.
He's built like a running back. I tell people this all the time. It doesn't work now because Fournette's no longer here. But if those two were standing next to each other and you took the numbers off the jerseys, you couldn't tell which one was the other because they're built roughly the same way. You know, and they used him as a decoy at times too. You know, he had some success early, and then they used the touchdown pass to Chark was really, really well designed because they put Shenault in motion. He comes over. They fake the wide receiver screen to him. That draws up the safety, and Chark just slides right behind him, and it's an easy touchdown throw. That was a 22-yarder. So Jay Gruden's playing a little bit of chess. They're trying to figure out the best way to play chess. So, you know, next week it might be Colin Johnson, the 6'6" rookie that they might try and feature down there in the red zone. You know, I'm sure they, you know, Jay Gruden said today he wants to get the tight ends a little bit more involved, Tyler Eifert and James O'Shaughnessy. So it's going to be a weekly deal where you kind of try and pick and figure out which guy or which area is going to be the area that they attack. And that's just kind of fun to watch when you don't really know what you're going to see every week from my standpoint. I mean, in the past, we kind of knew, hey, it was Leonard, first and 10, Leonard, second and 6, Leonard. You know, that was what this offense was built around, and it's not built around that anymore.
Yeah, and that's the thing. When you have that West Coast scheme. And when you have a guy in Jay Gruden, and so many people forget his Arena League ties. Like, this guy's an Arena League legend. And everything happens quickly in the Arena League. And so you're taking that thought process. He's a legend as a player and a coach. You know, you're taking that and putting it into what you have in the league with typically better athletes. And, you know, all you need is an accurate quarterback. So I think the Jaguars might be cooking with a little bit of grease right here.
Yeah, the key thing, though, is two things. Is Minshew struggled with some turnovers last year in terms of ball security in the pocket.
Okay.
And by the end of the season, he had sort of worked through that. But, you know, they need him to continue to improve there to make – and he didn't have a fumble the other day. Keep both hands on the ball, be a little bit more mindful of where you're holding it and carrying it when you're scrambling. And the other thing is, you know, he just needs to be more consistent because everybody loves – the kid and his attitude and the hair and the jorts and all that other stuff. And everyone points to the numbers last year, 21 touchdowns, 6 picks. But, you know, when you look and you look at the games, he had some terrible games, some absolutely terrible games. And they need him to be more consistent. And, I mean, you're not going to expect 19 of 20 every week. That's right. Obviously unrealistic. But just be efficient and consistent. And I think if he can do that and limit the turnovers, then they got a chance because that offense is got some playmakers, and it's certainly the strength of the team over the defense.
Tell me a little bit about the running back, James Robinson, because, I mean, I thought that, you know, Rakell Armstead would have a good shot. I thought that Chris Thompson, I believe Armstead was hurt or something along those lines. So how did they get to Robinson being the bell cow?
Well, you know, he was pretty impressive in camp. So impressive enough for Doug Marrone to go to his video crew during camp and go, hey, look, put together a highlight tape of all of his runs in college and all of his pass pros and all of his receptions. You know, this is during camp when these guys generally don't do that kind of stuff. He caught their eye, and he went back and he looked at that and realized, you know what, we might have a guy here that we can, you know, I'm not going to say build around, but certainly a guy here that can be a key player. And you know, the original plan, once they dumped Fournette, was to go with sort of a committee approach with Robinson and Devon Ozigbo and Raquel Armstead. But Armstead, you know, had a groin injury, an illness, and then he goes back on the COVID list for the second time. And Ozigbo is dealing with a hamstring injury that lands him on IR. So last week it was pretty much Robinson and Chris Thompson, and Robinson got all the work, and I expect that to kind of continue. He's a big kid, 219 pounds, but he's a little bit quicker and more athletic than you might think, as evidenced by the hurdle that he had the other day on a pass out of the backfield. The good thing about him is one of the knocks on Leonard Fournette was, you know, he would hesitate a little too much. There'd be a little bit too much dancing, a little bit too much, you know, trying to find the perfect spot. And Robinson is more of a get it, foot in the ground and go, and one cut and go. And I think that's very, very helpful for that offensive line, especially because it hasn't consistently played very well. It did in the first half, certainly last week. But I think he's a better fit for that. And he's a really ridiculously quiet guy. We were talking to Josh Allen the other day, and he was like, you know, I was walking down the hallway, and I heard James Robinson talking to somebody on the phone, and he goes, that's what his voice sounds like, because the kid never speaks. So, but he's just happy to be here, all the cliches and all that other stuff. But, I mean, I don't know that this kid's going to be a 1,000-yard rusher, but he's certainly somebody that they can work with. I mean, he averaged, what, six yards a carry in the first half of the game against the Colts the other day. So he's got a little bit of talent for sure.
Yeah, I was definitely watching him. You know what I mean? He's on my fantasy team. I picked him up just before the game, the week leading up to it. So, yeah, I was definitely watching him. Well, what's the mindset there? Because, I mean, you look at guys, Jalen Ramsey, obviously, but, you know, you look at Fournette, you know, he's out of there, and he's like, thank God I'm gone. I finally got a quarterback, this, that, and the third. I mean, the only guy that didn't leave that left, and I don't recall saying anything, is Calais Campbell, you know, and I wish he did because I love his Cookie Monster voice, you know what I mean? But, you know, so I have to ask you, what's the mindset there that you're sensing, like, in camp, you know, once Fournette was gone, like, how was the vibe?
the vibe was – there's a little bit of shock at first when they dumped Fournette, but, you know, we all knew this was going to be Fournette's last year here. Mm-hmm. He was not – they didn't pick up the fifth-year option. You know, they weren't going to re-sign him to a deal. So I think that, you know, when that move came down, there was some shock and surprise in the locker room. But this is a young team, and one of the goals that they set out, management, was to sort of fix a locker room that had soured. And, you know, they've got a bunch of young guys in it right now that, you know, are pretty quiet. They're not the, you know, pound the chest, I want the attention kind of guys in here. And they feel like they've got a really good locker room. You know, and Jalen Ramsey certainly was part of that problem there. You know, Unique Ngakoue, he was always a 100%, you know, effort guy in practice. When he was here in the building, he was fantastic, did his work, you know, no complaints. But, you know, the contract thing became an issue, and he and Dante Fowler didn't get along. So there were at least one fight every year between those two. So, you know, they tried to clean up all that, and they just got like a young, hungry, eager locker room. It's like a, you know, it's like a freshman team almost that comes in. You know, they're all chomping at the bit to get on the field, and they're you know, enthusiastic and all that other stuff. And I guess that's kind of refreshing for Doug Marrone. He said he feels the closest to this team of any team he's had as a head coach, including his time in Buffalo.
Wow. That's really interesting, and I never would have known that about Ngakoue and Fowler. But that's crazy. You know, this team, this younger team, he's only spent, what, a few months with these guys, and he's closer to them than any other team. That's interesting.
Yeah, it was really interesting when he said it, especially because, you know, there was no – it was all virtual offseason. You know, he didn't really get around all these guys until August.
Very interesting. Well – Mike, listen, man, I appreciate you coming on and enlightening us. And, man, it's too bad that I won't get to see you on Sunday. But we'll have to figure something out. You know, maybe we have a summit at some point or something. Who knows, man? But be safe with everything going on and enjoy the season. We'll talk again later this season.
Absolutely. You too, man. Thanks for having me. Always enjoy doing this with you guys.
Yeah, for sure. All right, man. Take care.
Thanks.
This is Corey Davis, and you're talking with TD.
Can it be that it was all so simple? That's the question, because you know what? Corey Davis went out and had an outstanding game against the Broncos. I think we need to talk about that. Seven receptions, 101 yards. He was a guy who got involved early, and he was someone I predicted to have over 100 yards. I could pat myself on the back, but I also got to slap myself because I said A.J. Brown would have over 100 too, and we know that didn't happen, but it's all good. I think just seeing Corey Davis get involved early and seeing Ryan Tannehill look his way and get the ball to him in tight windows and Davis come down with it, that's something that Corey Davis worked with Mike Vrabel about. They have periods of practice. And once again, we're talking about practice carrying over to game day. Ball disruption periods. That's what Vrabel calls it. And at this point, during one of the practices, he went over to Corey Davis and was just working with him on securing the ball all the way through the tuck. And as he would catch the ball and tuck it, Vrabel's punching at it and swiping at it and tugging. It ended up helping out because he made a couple catches in traffic. And if we're talking about catches in traffic, I know I'm talking about Corey Davis, but that gone. That Adam Humphries, jeez, that dude was getting body rocked, and he was holding on to the ball. I put on Twitter, I joked about it because Jim Harbaugh would always say when he used to cover the 49ers, and you ask him about a tough player, he'd be like, man, that guy's tougher than a $5 steak. And that gone, that Humphries was tougher than a $5 steak in that game. But getting back to Corey Davis, as you mentioned, Elijah, the stiff arm that he had. But I think just the yards after the catch, you know, that's something that Ryan Tannehill said stood out to him when he talked about it. But that connection, seeing that start to come together, that's the first time Corey Davis had 100 yards receiving in the game with Tannehill as his quarterback. First time. He didn't do it at all last year, even when Mariota was the dude. You know what I mean? So it's definitely a good thing for him to start going. He said he's going to do numbers this year. He got off to a good start. But you still want to see A.J. Brown a little bit more involved. They worked to get Jonnu Smith some touches. Mykole Pruitt had the touchdown. I give it to Tannehill. He's going to get it to whoever's open. He's not picking out one guy that he's going to throw to. He's going to spread the ball around. So that's definitely a positive. But when you look at Tannehill, I think we really have to talk about that drive. They get the ball at the 10-yard line, their 10-yard line, 90 yards to go, 3 minutes left. They need a field goal at least, but your kicker missed three field goals. I had one block, missed two, and also missed an extra point. You need a touchdown. Now, you know, if I'm the quarterback, I'm thinking we need to score. But he went in there. He didn't press one play at a time. They found that balance, as we talked about with Chris Sanders. And they drove down the field and set Gostkowski up for a very makeable field goal, and they won the game. No team has more – I'm going to say it again. No team since week seven when Tannehill took over has more fourth-quarter comebacks than the Titans. And Tannehill talked about that a little bit when he had his presser on Wednesday, and he said that it's just the undying belief that they have in each other. So I said, well, when did this start? You know, and I threw out the Week 10 game against the Chiefs because that's a big-time comeback, and that was really the first time I heard the guys come out and say, like, that dude is the general. He said, oh, it's just been a gradual buildup. And I really think that that Chiefs game was the one, but, you know, either way, they're here now, and that confidence in each other is there. They're going to need it this week, though, because, hey, look, man, Josh Allen is special, like I said before, and Chaseon is an up-and-comer. They're going to need it. I actually wanted to ask Mike Vrabel his take because, I mean, he's obviously a very good authority to speak on edge defenders. So here's what he said about the young Jaguars defenders.
And what are your thoughts on the Jaguars' young pass rushers and Josh Allen and Chaseon on the other side?
Yeah, I mean, that's always, you know, something that they've, you know, they've always had. You know, Allen is a disruptive player with good skill set, you know, good speed, really good length. We've always, you know, had trouble with him from his rookie year, and, you know, he'll be a challenge Sunday. Obviously, Chaseon is a player that we looked at in the draft and studied, and I think he'll just continue to get better the more he plays. Taven Bryan is a disruptive player inside. Smoot plays in there for him and is in there on some passing downs. And, you know, that's, you know, again, we're gonna have to prepare today and keep building throughout the week.
Josh Allen gave us some trouble last year. Hey, man, if you go back and look at that Jaguars game, Jack Conklin, oof. But this year he'll go against Dennis Kelly and we'll see what happens. For me, though, I think, you know, there's a couple matchups to look at, and man, AJ Brown, CJ Henderson, if that is something that we could get on a down in and down out basis, I will be very, very happy. So we'll see what happens there. We already talked about Derrick Henry. You know, him going against the Jaguars, that's typically been a good thing for the Titans. I think it's a Titans win. I think they start 2-0. They open up Nissan Stadium, albeit a relatively empty Nissan Stadium, with a win this season, and they're 2-0 and headed to Minnesota to face the Vikings. What do you think?
Man, the history between these two teams the last couple of years gives me some pause to think that the Jags are going to keep it a lot closer than what I anticipate. The Titans are obviously going to open up as heavy favorites, and the Titans, like, even offensively, are still working some things out, but there's some very optimistic signs Titans fans should take over from the Broncos game, especially Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry taking over the game when it mattered most. And it's always encouraging to see when you're underperforming to your standards and are still pulling games out. It's a sign of an experienced team, a mature team. The Jaguars surprised everybody beating the Colts in the first game. Certainly surprised me, especially considering they're tanking. allegedly. But I got to go Titans, but I think it's going to be closer than people think. The Titans still might open up as like, what, 8.5, 9-point favorites even?
I don't know.
I think it's going to go within that. I think the Jaguars can keep it a one-score game. Minshew takes a lot of safe passes. They play to his strengths really well. I don't know. It's going to be hard for me to see the Titans not win this one, but I like them to pull through and be the first 2-0 start since 2008.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens, man. I think if that line is that high, you definitely should go against the Titans. That doesn't mean you're expecting them to lose. It's just you don't
divisional
have them
games
winning no. by that many points. And again, it's a divisional game. Those are typically close. You said there's a lot of positive to pull out of it, but there is some negative to pull out of that Broncos game. And listen, man, it's that time.
Blow the whistle.
Yes. Yes. Hey, Rashawn Evans. Come on, man. I'm blowing the whistle on Rashawn Evans, the normally calm and collective player. I don't know what Jake Butt must have said or done to Rashawn Evans, because I literally, in 2 years covering this dude, I literally have never seen him get out of character like that. Something happened. Whatever it did, he had that response, and it cost him the game. He was ejected. But here's the thing, man. Not only did he get ejected, but, you know, you're throwing a punch at somebody's helmet. Dog, if you connect, you can have a broken hand. You are the key to that defense. You're one of the keys, man. Strength up the middle. Jeffrey Simmons, Rashawn Evans, Kevin Byard, that's the meat of this defense. Rashawn, do better next time. I know he will. I think he has a good game this week. It's redemption time for him, so I'm sure he'll be listening to that Bob Marley redemption song, and we'll see what happens. But that's the show. I appreciate each of you for tuning in. Make sure you check us out, thegamenashville.com. ESPN.com. Click that NFL page. Click Titans. Click follow. On that note, God bless and good night.